Chapter 44. Naomi. Even a steady 1G could be unpleasant for her. The constant press of 2 was a slow torture. It began as a deep ache in her knees and the base of her spine, then progressed quickly to sharp pain, like a needle stuck into the joints. Naomi surveyed the Chetsmuka in stages, moving through a deck, then lying down until the pain lessened, then the next deck. Her hands and feet hurt even as the swelling subsided. Her cough didn't get better, but it didn't get worse. The first disappointment was that the controls were in lockdown. She tried a few passwords, Free Navy, and Marco is great, and Philip. But even if she got it right, there was no reason to expect that they'd left the biometrics profiles turned off. The lockers by the airlock hung open and empty. The 3 EVA suits that remained didn't have batteries or air bottles. The emergency rations were gone. She expected the toolboxes to be gone from the machine shop, but they'd taken out the racks that held them too, the drawers from the cabinets, the LEDs from the wall lights. The crash couches were all slit open, gel and padding pooled on the deck beside them. The drug delivery system and reservoirs were gone. The only water was in the drives. Ejection mass to be spit out the back of the ship. The only food was the residue in the recyclers that hadn't been processed back into anything edible. The stink of welding rigs and burning still hung in the air, so the air recycler was probably running unfiltered. Naomi lay on the deck, her head resting on her hands and her eyes closed. The ship had been constructed for one use and as an insurance write-off. Its working life had begun with it being disposable, and it had been looted from there. Even the physical panels and monitors had been salvaged and carried away. As presents to Philip went, it was actually pretty crappy. The deck shook under her, the vibration of thrust setting up resonances that no system even tried to damp down. Between the high G and the vacuum damage leaking fluid into her lungs, breathing took more effort than it should have. The ship wasn't a ship. She needed to stop thinking of it that way. It was a bomb. It was what she'd done to the Augustin Gamara years ago, and had carried with her ever since like a weight around her throat. Jim had known the kind of person that landed on water haulers like the Canterbury. He'd said that everyone there had reasons for being there. There were reasons the ship she'd tried to give to her son was stripped empty and triggered to kill. Not just her, but anyone who came close to her. There were reasons. If she could defuse it, undo the threat, then she could follow it back, though. Take it to Ceres, where it had all started. There should be a way through the machine shop. All machine shops were supposed to be connected at the back. She reached out her hands, only they weren't her hands. She was dreaming. She forced her eyes open and rolled to her back with an exhausted sob. Okay. If she stopped moving now, she was going to sleep. That was good to know. She sat up, rested her head against the wall. Sleep later. Sleep when you're dead. Or even better, sleep when you're safe. She grinned to herself. Safe. That sounded like a good plan. She should try that for a change. She balled her hands into tight fists. The joints all screamed in pain, but when she opened them, her fingers moved better. That was probably a metaphor for something. She had to set priorities. She didn't have a lot of resources. If she just grabbed at the first idea that came to her, it would be easy to exhaust herself without getting the critical work done. She needed to get food and water and make sure the air supply was reliable. She needed to warn anyone coming to save her not to approach. She needed to disarm the trap. Maybe dump core. Maybe replace the drivers with a copy that didn't carry her poisoned code. And she needed to do it before the ship blew up. At 2G. Without tools or access to the controls. Or, was that right? Access to the controls was going to be hard, but she should be able to improvise some tools. The EVA suits weren't powered and didn't have bottles, but they had seals and reinforcement. She could take the cloth apart and salvage some lengths of wire, maybe something solid enough to cut with. And she could use the helmet clamps as a kind of vice grip or clamp. She wasn't sure, Even if she could, what would that gain her? More than you've got now, she said aloud, her voice reverberating in the empty space. All right, step one, make tools. Step two, drop core, or warn anyone coming in. She stood up and forced herself back to the airlock lockers. 5 hours later, she was on the ship's perfunctory little engineering deck, sealing the hatch manually. Two of the EVA suits had given up what little they had to offer to make a tiny, sketchy toolkit. Doing anything with the controls had failed. So she could be a rat in a box, or she could take out the middleman. After all, the controls all connected to machinery, and the machinery, some of it, was where she could put her hands on it. The space between the hulls was in vacuum, and she didn't have any great faith that the outer hull was actually sealed. The one remaining suit held about 5 minutes' worth of air without a bottle, and she could set the radio to passive and pick up the faintest echo of her own voice, making the false message with a residual charge in the wires. The lock that should have let her get into and out of the maintenance access had been hauled off as salvage, but she could turn the full engineering deck into a makeshift airlock, close the hatch to the rest of the ship, force the access panel into the space between hulls. She budgeted 2 minutes to locate something useful, a power repeater she could sabotage to force the drive to shut down, the wiring for the comm system, an unsecured console that was talking to the computers, then 2 minutes to get back out. 30 seconds to close and seal the maintenance panel and pop the engineering hatch. She'd lose a roomful of air every time, but she'd only lose a roomful. She put on the helmet and checked the seals, then opened the access panel. It fought her at first, then gave all at once. She thought she felt a rush of escaping air go past her, but it was probably her imagination. 20 seconds already gone. She crawled into the vacuum between the hulls. The darkness was so complete it was like closing her eyes. She tapped the suit's controls, but no beam of light came from them. She backed out, closed the access panel, opened the hatch, and took off her helmet. Light, she said to the empty space. Going to need some light. The monitor hung from wires, asking for her password. It just fit past the lip of the access panel and filled the space between the hulls with light so dim she couldn't see colors in it. Shadows of struts and spars made deeper darkness all around and shapes she couldn't make sense of. She had 45 seconds before she had to head back. It was the fifth time she'd been down trying to scrape through the coating on the wires. In a real ship, it would have all been protected by conduit. On this piece of crap, the wiring had all been fixed directly to the hull with a layer of yellowed silicon epoxy. On the one hand, it was a blessing. On the other, she was horrified that she'd ever trusted her life to the ship. If she'd inspected between the hulls before they left Ceres, she'd have been sleeping in an environment suit the whole way to the Pella. The coating peeled free. 30 seconds. She took a bit of salvaged wire and shorted the circuit. A fat spark leaped out, and the world lurched. Across the space, maybe 4 meters away, an indicator light went amber, and she was falling sideways. With the extra illumination, she could see the round, tree-thick body of the maneuvering thruster. She put out her arms, catching herself against a steel strut. When she pressed her helmet to it, the rumble of the drive drowned out the ghost-quiet radio. She reached for the wire, broke the connection, and the rumble stopped. Out of time, she turned back, her head swimming. The ship was spinning then. She had no way to know how quickly, but the Coriolis was enough to make her stumble on the way back. With the panel closed, the hatch open, and her helmet off again, she sat still until her balance came close to returning. Then, moving carefully, drunkenly, she scratched the new information on the wall. She was developing a crude map of the ship's secret interior, and keeping track of all she learned. She was tired enough not to trust her memory. From the count she'd started, she knew she'd been on 30 sorties. Now, for the first time, she'd done something. It was only one thruster, but the ship was spinning now, tumbling in circles instead of burning ahead in a line. All the acceleration would be bled into the changing angular momentum, and she wouldn't be going toward Jim as quickly. So maybe she'd bought a little time. It would make things harder for her, but she'd grown up in the belt and on ships. Coriolis and coping with the sick dizziness was nothing new to her. She knew that the feeling of power and accomplishment she felt was out of scale with what she'd actually managed, but she grinned all the same. 30 sorties. 2.5 hours, just, of time spent in vacuum. That didn't count the minutes refreshing the air in her suit or planning out the next run. Maybe 5 hours total since she'd started this. She was exhausted. She felt it in her muscles and the pain in her joints. She hadn't eaten, couldn't eat. She was thirsty with the first strains of dehydration headache coming on. There was no reason to think she would survive this. So she was surprised to notice that she was happy. Not the powerful, irrational, and dangerous joy of a euphoric attack, but a kind of pleasure and release all the same. At first, she thought it was because there wasn't anyone there with her, guarding her, judging her, and that, she decided, was part of it. But more than that, she was simply doing what needed to be done without having to concern herself about what anyone else thought, even Jim. And wasn't that odd? She wanted nothing in the world more than for Jim to be there, followed by Amos and Alex, and a good meal and a bed at a humane gravity. But there was a part of her that was also expanding into the silence of simply being herself and utterly alone. There were no dark thoughts, no guilt, no self-doubt tapping at the back of her mind. Either she was too tired for that, or something else had happened to her while she'd been paying attention to other things. This was the difference, she thought, between solitude and isolation. And now she knew something about herself she hadn't known before. It was an unexpected victory, and all the better for that. She started getting ready for the 31st sortie. She had almost a minute, because she'd figured out that coming up the comm array power supply took a lot longer than it did going back down. It was the sort of thing she'd have realized much more quickly if her mind hadn't been a little on the compromised side. The comm system was held in place by more than epoxy. Long strips of metal tape lashed the transmitter in place, the welds still bright as if they'd been made yesterday. 3 sorties ago, number 44, she thought there might be a diagnostic handset. Not that she could speak into it, but she might have been able to tap out a message. But despite the fact that handsets like that were standard and required, there wasn't one. It had taken her some time to put together a backup plan. For hours, the looped message had played in her ear, whispering on the back of residual charge. "This is Naomi Nagata of the Rosinante. If you get this message, please retransmit. Tell James Holden I am in distress. Comm is not responding. I have no nav control. Please retransmit." 13 seconds long, and barely louder than the sound of her breath, even with her head less than a meter from the transmitter. With the leads to the transmitter exposed, she was ready. She'd have 4 times through. It had to be enough that it wouldn't be mistaken for random interference. She pressed her head to the hull to distract from the whirling of her inner ear. "This is Naomi Nagata," she said, matching the timing and cadence of her false self. "If you get this message, please retransmit. Tell James Holden I am in..." She slammed the wire onto the exposed leads. A shiver of electricity bit her fingertips even through the suit's gloves. The radio was silent, but she kept mouthing the words, replaying them like a song stuck in her head until the right moment, then yanked the wire free. "Control, please retransmit. This is Naomi Nagata of the Rosinante. If you get this message, please retransmit. Tell James Holden I am in..." Cut. Pause. "Control, please retransmit." After the 4th time, she took the length of steel spring she'd been using as a knife and cut the transmitter. Her false voice went dead. She scrambled down, moving from strut to strut, watching her hands and feet with every movement so she wouldn't misjudge. The acceleration gravity made her ankles and wrists feel unstable. The air in her suit didn't feel stale or close. The carbon dioxide scrubbers worked well enough on passive that she wouldn't feel the panic of asphyxiation. She'd just gently pass out and die. She ducked into the engineering deck, closed the access panel. On the way to the hatch, her knee buckled. She popped the hatch open, ripped off her helmet, and sank down, gasping. Her vision narrowed, bright sparkles filling in her peripheral vision. She dry-heaved once, paused, did it again, and let her body's weight sink deep into the deck below her. "Tell James Holden I'm in control. For some really broad definition of control," she thought, and laughed. Then coughed until her ribs hurt even worse. Then laughed again. At her 71st sortie, she hit the wall. It wasn't subtle. She had closed the hatch to the main body of the ship, closed the seals, and put her helmet onto the environment suit. Before she fixed it into place and started the next 5-minute count, her hands dropped to her sides. She hadn't consciously intended to do that. It had just happened. Alarmed in a vague, distant kind of way, she sat on the deck with her back against the wall and tried moving them. If she'd just become paralyzed or something, that would change the situation, give her permission to stop. But her hands still flexed, her shoulders still moved. She was just exhausted. Even the effort to swallow seemed heroic. She closed her eyes, wondering if she'd instantly fall asleep, but she was too weary for that. So she sat. If the suit had a battery, it would probably be cataloging the failures of her body right now. The dehydration headache was worse now and moving in toward nausea. Her skin felt raw where the unshielded sun had burned her. Though she wasn't producing as much, she was still coughing, and she figured her blood was probably about equal parts plasma and fatigue poisons by now. Her two little victories, the thruster, the transmitter, had been the end. Since then, either her efforts had degraded, or things had genuinely gotten more complicated, or both. The repeaters that would cause the core to shut down had either been omitted in the build or were tucked someplace that couldn't be reached from between the hulls. The sensor array that would trigger the bottle failure when a rescue ship got too close would have been a lovely thing to access, but it appeared to be mounted on the exterior where she couldn't get to it. There were half a dozen places she could have tried tapping into the computer system, but none of them had interfaces, and she didn't have any she could bring. Other plans and strategies flickered through her mind from time to time like fireflies. Some of them might have been good. She couldn't keep hold of them long enough to say. She might have slept, or the timeless skipping might just have been how her brain worked now. The voice she heard was just a whisper fainter than her own voice had been, but it snapped her back to herself.
"Hey there, Chet Smoka. This is Alex Kamal, presently the Razorback. Naomi? If you're there, I'd appreciate you giving me a sign. I'd sort of like to make sure it's you before we come over. Your ship's been acting a mite odd, and we're a little on the jumpy side. And just in case it's not Naomi Nagata, I've got 15 missiles locked on you right now, so whoever you are, you might want to talk with me."
"Don't," she said, knowing he couldn't hear her. "Stay away. Stay away." Everything hurt. Everything whirled. Nothing was easy. When she got to her feet, her head swam. She was afraid she was going to pass out, but if she bent over, she wasn't sure she'd have the strength to stand back up. She had to find a way to wave him off. She had to keep him from getting close enough to be caught in the blast. Whether it saved her life or not didn't matter. She'd had her good day. It was more than she'd expected, and she was so deeply weary. Breathing hard, she opened the engineering hatch for the last time and stumbled for the lift. And after the lift, the airlock.